This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. This week in Pennsylvania, a solidly red district turned blue. Democrat Connor Lamb beat Republican and State Representative Rick Saccone. The special election for the state's 18th congressional district was close, but Donald Trump won that by 20 points in the presidential election, so quite a swing. Is this a wake-up call for the GOP? Political junkie Ken Rudin is here to talk about that and much, much more. Hello, Ken.
Hello, Frank. Once again, tons to talk about. It's like it never ends, and it gets more intense every week.
More intense and more complicated because within this turbulent political milieu, it's a little bit hard to make perfect sense of the upset victory of Connor Lamb, right? I mean, there's a lot of streams that fed that flood.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, the fact is that Connor Lamb was not the archetypical Democrat. He supported, you know, gun rights. He was a strong proponent of gun rights, and of course, that is not a popular position in the Democratic Party these days, especially in the aftermath of the tragedies. He was a strong opponent of Nancy Pelosi. That is not the Nancy Pelosi may not be popular nationwide, but she is popular among Democrats in Congress. And of course, he supported the president's tariffs. Tariffs on steel and you know, in the west southwest part of Pennsylvania, which is not a Democratic view. Democrats, of course, like, you know, are not, that's not the kind of positions they usually take. But each special district, each special election, and that's why they call it a special election, each special election has its own special requirements and needs, and Connor Lamb filled them perfectly.
Given the fact that he was not a conventional Democratic candidate, as you suggest, is there anything to be made of this? Is there anything going forward in November to make of what happened in Pennsylvania?
Well, look, I mean, your introduction is a perfect example. This is a district that Donald Trump won by nearly 20 percentage points in 2016. 4 years earlier, Mitt Romney won it by 17. The district is so solidly Republican that in 2014 and 2016, Democrats didn't even put up a candidate for Congress in the district. And the only reason Tim Murphy is not running again, the Republican, is that, of course, as a pro-life Republican, he quit Congress because we learned that he was trying to get his mistress to have an abortion. That's not a good thing to do when you're a pro-life Republican. But having said that, I mean, this is Democratic strength we haven't seen in a long time. And for those people who are saying that the big labor, so-called big labor, the unions are no longer effective, well, they sure got out the vote on Tuesday in Pennsylvania.
Well, let's talk about turnout, because if anything is going to influence the race in November, it would be turnout. A big turnout would seem to be in favor of Democratic candidates in most places, since turnout has been so light recently. How was the turnout in the 18th district?
Well, I mean, it's hard to compare it to previous elections, of course, because, as I said, Democrats haven't really given much of a fight in the 18th district, and that's because after the 2000 census, the Republican legislature in Pennsylvania redrew all the districts, including the 18th, and then so ever since 2002. There have been 13 Republicans winning House seats and 5 Democrats because of the way the districts have been drawn. Now, those districts will be redrawn for 2018 in the Democrats' favor. So that is very interesting as well.
Well, let's talk about that. Yeah, the fact is the Democrats pick up a solidly Republican seat under the old illegally gerrymandered districts. The new fair ones go into effect. Is it by the 2018 election? Will it be November, or does it happen after the race?
No, it'll be to, first of all, I always have trouble with the word illegal. I mean, this is what parties do.
Yeah, but I mean, the court said you had to redraw.
Exactly,
so at that
right.
point, it means you violated the law. Go do
and
it again.
The difference in Pennsylvania, while the Supreme Court will decide, they'll probably rule in June about the legality of partisan redistricting. In Pennsylvania, the state Supreme Court said, we're not going to wait for the U.S. Supreme Court. This is wrong. This has to change. And so as soon as the May 15th primary, which is in Pennsylvania, also North Carolina at the same time, but in Pennsylvania, oh, no, I'm sorry, North Carolina is May 8th, but the Pennsylvania primary, May 18th, will be the new lines that favor the Democrats, and the Democrats could pick up anywhere between 4 and 5 additional seats because of a fairer drawing of the line, of the district lines.
All right, well, let's talk about another important story. Rex Tillerson hopefully has a Twitter account so he could find out he didn't have a job on his way home.
Isn't that something? I mean, look, I can make the case. I think anybody can make the case that the president and his Secretary of State need to be on the same page. And it was clear this was not a love match here. Rex Tillerson opposed the president on the wisdom of the Iran nuclear deal, on negotiations and diplomacy in North Korea. When Donald Trump said those things, those hideous things about those S-hole countries that where people are coming in from, Rex Tillerson was in Africa as recently as last week, saying that, well, you know, something, we don't feel that way. So they were not on the same page. And in fairness, you want a Secretary of State who agrees with you. But having said that, you think of Reagan and James Baker. They were not best friends before James Baker became Reagan's Secretary of State, but they trusted each other, and Baker was a great Secretary of State. If you have a president undermining your own Secretary of State from day one, well, obviously countries around the world are not going to respect him either, and so it's just a matter of time that Tillerson was gone.
Well, and obviously the question about who he was, I mean, the fact is a lot of this the president should have known beforehand, the Iran nuclear deal, for instance. I mean, these aren't things that happened during his tenure. These were things that you would know during the recruitment process, and you would either hire or not hire based on your compatibility. And yet somehow the president or the White House or whoever does the hiring went ahead.
But look what's going on with this White House. I mean, you think of Gary Cohn, who's the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors, who quit. I mean, he didn't quit over Charlottesville, which a lot of people thought he should quit over that, but he quit over the tariffs. And then the president looks on TV and sees Larry Kudlow, who is he's the new bright, shiny object. He likes TV stars, and I don't know how much vetting Trump did with Kudlow. Of course, Kudlow opposes him on tariffs as well, but, you know, he's new. He's a new shining thing, and he's a TV star, and you know how President Trump feels about TV stars, so Larry Kudlow is now the chief economic advisor, or at least for now. We'll see if that romance falls as well.
But, well, as you say, he's in the same place that Cohn was when it came to the tariff, and that's the reason Cohn left. So it's kind of puzzling about this particular. I mean, apart from the fact that he saw him on TV and liked the way he looked.
But that's exactly right. But think of everybody who worked for the president. I mean, one, I still think that you sell a part of your soul when you join the administration. But look at Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions was the first senator to back Donald Trump. Donald Trump said the greatest things about Jeff Sessions until he recused himself in the Russian investigation. And suddenly, basically, the president to this day blames Jeff Sessions for the creation of Robert Mueller, the special counsel, because Jeff Sessions couldn't do the job because he recused himself. So all these, I mean, talk about vetting, all these people who latched on to President Trump early and you would think would be great chemistry, that has really fallen apart. John Kelly, the chief of staff. When he came in last summer, he was going to change everything. It was great news for Trump. Trump can't stand him. Look at H.R. McMaster, not H.R. Haldeman, not to compare it to Watergate, but H.R. McMaster, the national security advisor. He had great respect for him. He's a general and all that stuff, and now he feels he's a weakling and a loser. And so, you know, he's high on somebody just until it suits his purposes, and then he leaves them, breaks up with them very quickly.
Talking to the political junkie Ken Rudin today on The State of Things. Well, Mike Bob Pompeo is not a TV star, but was the president's choice to replace Rex Tillerson at the head of CIA. So there's that choice. And perhaps what might be more controversial is who the president has tapped to replace Pompeo, Gina Haspel, who, in fact, ran a secret prison in Thailand and was instrumental in the Bush-era torture process, the torture stories that came out of the Bush administration CIA. She's his pick to replace Mike Pompeo at CIA. That's going to cause some fireworks on the Hill, would you say?
Well, you know, it should cause fireworks on the Hill, and maybe if there was a Congress, a Senate that really paid attention to these confirmation hearings. But the fact that Betsy DeVos was confirmed as Secretary of Education, albeit with a tie-breaking vote of Mike Pence. But the fact that so many members of the cabinet were confirmed with questionable qualifications, my goodness, Scott Pruitt at EPA. But you know, sometimes they sometimes loyalty to the president and the party outweigh loyalty to the country. And so, yes, there are tremendous questions about what her role has been in torture and surveillance of prisoners during the Bush administration. But is her nomination in jeopardy? I suspect not. I think the questions will be raised, but do I think she'll be confirmed? I do. And Mike Pompeo is even more Donald Trump than Donald Trump at some point. Not too long ago, he called for, or at least alluded to, the fact that we'd be better off if we just got rid of Kim Jong-un in North Korea. Get rid of him completely. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Donald Trump always talked about he's against regime change when he would criticize the Bush administration. But Mike Pompeo is solidly a Trump Republican.
You're listening about 30 seconds in this segment, but you talked about Republican support for him. And, again, we look at this election in the president's historically low ratings, approval ratings, and now this last election. Is the president starting to cost the Republican Party, and are they starting to notice?
Well, I think he is starting to cost the Republican Party. I think the fact that he went down and campaigned enthusiastically for Roy Moore in Alabama when other Republicans were saying, what are you doing? But that doesn't deter him. And for the most part, the Republicans are saying this was not Trump's loss. It was just that Rick Saccone was a terrible Republican candidate. They don't blame it on Trump. And until they start blaming it on Trump, they may not know what they're facing in November.
All right. Political junkie Ken Rudin. Our conversation will continue on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, continuing our conversation with the political junkie Ken. The House Intelligence Committee finished its investigation into Russia's meddling into the last presidential election. Senate Intelligence Committee still working, and Robert Mueller's team is still working, and they recently subpoenaed the Trump Organization to turn over business documents and all the documents related to Trump's business dealings in Russia. So not over yet, huh, Ken?
Well, I don't know why this investigation is still going on, because the House Intelligence Committee, led by Devin Nunes, said there's nothing, there's no there. I mean, which shows what a joke that whole Intelligence Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, has been from the beginning compared to the Richard Burr and Mark Warner Senate Intelligence Committee. But having said that, what Robert Mueller, the special counsel, did this week in subpoenaing the Trump Organization's documents for whatever they've done to Trump's business dealings with Russia, that is a big deal, because there are a lot of people feel that if there's any illegality or obstruction of justice or anything that could put the president in danger, it's his business dealings. It's to follow the money with outside money, foreign money, especially from Russia. So Trump Organization, and this is something that Donald Trump said once upon a time, that this would be a crossing a red line, that you know, you could do what you want, you can investigate what you want, but talking about my organization, my Trump business organization, and what it does with its business dealings, that is none of his business, basically, and Robert Mueller obviously feels otherwise.
Well, the legal questions involved in this, but then the political questions become even more acute and more serious as Russia becomes ever more a menace to national security, as we saw this week, meddling in cyber attacks on our power plants, nuclear power plants here and in England. This is a national security threat, and if we find out the president has business dealings with them still, this becomes a much more serious political question even than a legal one.
And I think so. I think the Trump White House knows that, and that's why, despite urging for the longest time, finally the White House has put in new sanctions on Moscow. I think it was just yesterday, one over the interference in the election and about the cyber attacks, as you say, and the attack, the nerve gas attack in Britain. So there is an acknowledgement to politics that backing Russia, or at least refusing to criticize Vladimir Putin, is not smart politics, even though that may be his personal preference. And so you saw the White House instituting sanctions yesterday that they had been fighting for the longest time.
Let's talk about gun control. The president waffled and backed down in the face of NRA pressure, but not the Florida legislature or its governor. Let's talk about that remarkable movement in politics, yeah, at least in Florida.
Now, I'm glad you said that, because when the Florida legislature picked up, did its legislation on guns, and this is after the kids from Parkland and elsewhere in the state marched to Tallahassee, the state capital. There were a lot of Democrats on Capitol Hill in Washington who said, well, these are baby steps. These are small steps. I disagree. I think it's significant that a Republican state like Florida, like in Tallahassee, where most of the state, much of the state is very pro-gun rights. I mean, yeah, the South Florida and Parkland, and where those horrific tragedies happened, not only in Parkland but in Orlando, that has not really affected political point of view in the state, or at least it hadn't until now. So you have these very conservative lawmakers in Tallahassee passing, you know, raising the limit, when you get age limit to buy a gun from 18 to 21, strengthening background checks, putting restrictions on bump stocks. This is something, one, is anathema to the NRA, and it's two, while Donald Trump suggested these things a few weeks ago and said, what's the matter? You know, I don't have anything to fear from the NRA. He backed down within a week, but lawmakers in Tallahassee and Florida did not do it. They passed this legislation, and a very conservative governor of Florida, Rick Scott, who is likely to run for the Senate this year, signed the bill. So I don't know if there's a sea change. I don't know if Parkland really changed something. I don't know if these student demonstrators, and we'll see it around the country on March 24th, if these demonstrations against gun violence will make a difference. But I thought what happened in Florida this week was big news.
The big test is whether these lawmakers survive the next vote. And if they do, then I think you'll see some pretty dramatic change. So that's,
and
I think,
fear,
what we're going to pay attention.
The fear, of course, the big fear for the Republicans is not so much in November, but in the Republican primary.
Yeah.
And, of course, in the Florida Republican primary isn't until the fall. And I think that's true with a lot of members of Congress as well. They fear that a lot of Republicans say that even if they do start to say that some changes need to be made in gun laws, there's always the fear that somebody from the conservative wing of the party, the NRA wing of the party, will challenge them in the primary. And we know the strength of NRA when it comes to mailings and voting guides and things like that.
Certainly has been true in the past. We'll see if it persists. Okay, a lot of heady news, very difficult stuff to analyze, but at least America can still have a good old sex scandal. CBS will air the interview with porn star Stormy Daniels. So far, now it looks like it's scheduled for March 25th. Stormy said she is a pornographic film star who claims to have had an affair with Donald Trump and claims to have been paid $130,000 not to talk about it. And so how does this story compare now to past affairs? Because we know presidents have, you know, gotten in trouble before for this kind of thing, although not necessarily a porn star.
Well, yeah, well, look, President Clinton had his Monica Lewinsky and was impeached over it. The fact that Donald Trump was elected, even in the aftermath of the Access Hollywood tape, so we know who Donald Trump is, but we also know that he's denied all these claims by all these women constantly. This one feels different, and the reason it feels different is because even whether Stormy Daniels, whatever she says happened, you know, the allegations she made, it's clear that there was a payment from Michael Cohen, the president's lawyer, of $130,000 out of his own pocket, he says, you know, which strains credibility and credulity, but out of his own to keep her quiet. And now the administration is talking about hiring new lawyers, getting new lawyers to fight CBS and 60 Minutes if they dare to play that air that interview. Now it's scheduled for March 25th. This is big news. I mean, I know the evangelical community has rolled its eyes and ignored the kind of transgressions that Donald Trump has been accused of doing, while certainly not being that lenient to other politicians in the past. But even with Donald Trump and all his history of, you know, relationships with women, this seems bigger, not because of the salaciousness of it, but the fact is there clearly was a payment to keep her quiet. Even Sarah Huckabee Sanders inadvertently acknowledged that was the case. And, you know, if that's going on, it's, look, I mean, everybody has written Donald Trump's political obituary that never seems to happen. This seems more serious than most.
So you're thinking 2 weeks from now when we have you back, you'll also have something to talk about.
I think we will. I think it's possible. And I know, Frank, you and I always love to talk about sex scandals. Mm. But this is actually, I mean, I'm joking, of course, but this is First Amendment, and this is maybe the future of the presidency. Between Stormy Daniels and Robert Mueller, the next 2 weeks are going to be very interesting.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.